Radio 1.
Welcome back. You're listening to The Business with Conor Brophy. Our next guest this morning is a man who's been a stalwart of Dublin's nightlife for decades. Robbie Fox's career began collecting glasses in a Ballymun pub. He went on to run and own a number of restaurants and bars, the most famous of which was probably Reynard's, very popular celebrity hangout. In 2009, he lost it all though and ended up with debt running into millions. He's back with the restaurant Bellucci's in Balls Bridge in Dublin. But Robbie, first of all, let's wind the clock back 5 years. Where exactly did it go wrong?
Yeah, well, I don't know. I don't think I can point the finger at anywhere in particular. I mean, obviously, I have to share a certain amount of the blame, but it happened in 2009. So, I mean, the crash had already come, or we were in the depths of it. I had expanded probably bigger than I should have done, and unfortunately, you know, the decline in business, high rents, and various other, and the whole thing just crumbled.
Because again, for people who didn't know the names of the various premises, yeah. You had a couple of restaurants.
Yeah, we had Barracuda and Bray. We had Brown's Barn on the Nace Road. We had Reynard's.
The Brown's Barn expansion, though, was quite a big one at the time.
Brown's Barn was the last one, and was the big one. It was a big roadhouse, and it had been lying there idle for years. Most people would know it. It's a big stone building opposite the Independent building there. And it was a big move. It was a brave move. But I think at the time the economy was booming. You know, when we took it on, the economy was booming and things were good. And it was a huge premises. It held, it was 17,000 square feet. And the restaurant seated 150 people. There was a huge bar and carvery downstairs. And we borrowed a lot of money, which is probably part of the problem.
And that, if I'm right, that wasn't something that you had tended to do in business up to that.
No, when I took on Brown's Barn, I took it on with a partner. And it was the first time I really went to a bank for a big amount of money. I was lucky in that each business I'd opened had kind of financed the next one. You know, so I mean, you know, I was never one to sort of sit on a lot of cash. If I was making money, I'd buy something else or create something else, because I that's what I like about the business, is creating something new and doing something different. But this was a thing that came to me. I mean, this guy I got involved with, the partner, came to me with an idea, and we had done the finances, we'd done all our due diligence, done everything, and it on paper it looked like it worked, it was going to work. And to be fair, for the first 12 months it did work. For the first 12 months,
and clearly
it was,
the bank was happy to give you the money.
The bank. Well, that's part of the problem, isn't it? There, but
how much money was it? If you don't mind,
it was over 2 million, and that paid for everything, the renovation and the whole lot, and it was a beautiful premises, but. I suppose in hindsight, like those huge rents there, and in hindsight, yeah, I mean, you'd never do that again. I mean, not ever again, probably, in this country. But as I say, the first year was very successful. It went very well. We had queues into the carvery. The restaurant was full most nights. But then when we got into the second year, you know, the crash had happened. There was also a big clampdown on the drink and driving. And to be fair, it was a roadhouse, which I don't think would survive anymore, because a roadhouse basically is for people to stop their car and come in for a drink and eat. And I mean, you know, that just doesn't work. When we opened first, the car park held 250 cars. And I remember going to the landlord asking for more space. And when we closed down, I think there was 5 cars in the car park. So that was the difference. That's how things had declined, you know. And I think, not only Brown's Barn, but the whole economy, all the businesses were suffering. And we were probably had borrowed too much money. And it just, you know, it all crumbled.
Would the other businesses have survived, though, wasn't for Brown's Barn?
Well, probably. I mean, Reynard's was in a bit of a decline as well. It needed money invested into it. I didn't have the money at the time. And the city was changing. Things were changing. Reynard's would have definitely needed an overhaul or a refurbishment. And we didn't have the wherewithal to do that. So maybe not. But there again, if I had the money, maybe. You know, I'll never know.
In terms of... you know, the fallout from it, obviously, a lot of people lost money, not just yourself. There was a debt to the revenue, there were suppliers. How did you manage all that?
Well, with great difficulty, and I'm still managing it. I mean, we're nearly 5 years on now, and I mean, I still carry a lot of debt. There was a lot of personal guarantees, to banks, and I'm still dealing with that. Unfortunately, yes, there were some people that were burnt. I mean, the revenue, obviously, some landlords, but a lot of people, I was, especially suppliers. The nature of the business that we're in, suppliers are never really that far behind. They're about 30 days behind, so there wouldn't have been an awful lot of people who would have been hurt that badly. You know what I mean? But some definitely, and some small guys would, you know, can't take a big hit. So, I mean, you know, they were hurt. But I don't think anybody that couldn't afford it was hurt too much. Let's put it that way. Now, people might disagree with that, but that's my memories, if you like. And as I say, we're still dealing with it. For the first year, it was very difficult. And even to this day, I mean, when I open the letterbox every morning, there's six or seven letters from, you know, debt collectors, banks, you know, and it just goes on. But you do learn to deal with it. You have to pick yourself up, dust yourself off, and keep going.
Personal guarantees, does that potentially put the family home under threat?
Well, in some cases, but in my case, I was lucky because it didn't. Everything else did, but the family home is safe. But there were occasions, like, simple answers, I'm not 100% sure. I mean, none of the banks ever came after my house or ever suggested that they would. And I've taken advice on this, and they tell me that the family home is safe.
But it's quite a scary prospect. I mean, we've seen even, you know, if you look at the Tony O'Reilly situation recently, somebody you never thought would be in a position where they'd be selling the family home. It affects everybody, the great and the good.
As I was going to say, for the first year, I mean, it was terrible. It was obviously new territory to me. There was, like, we had been used to a certain level. I mean, we were never really flash with cash. I mean, as I said, when I made money, I tried to open another business. But at the same time, you get used to having money in your pocket. You get used to being able to afford things. And all of a sudden, we had to change our lifestyle. So that was difficult. And, you know, the first couple of weeks when I really realised that the business was gone, like, there comes a time when you say, I've got to pull the plug here. And you don't want to do it. I mean, you know, in a lot of cases, you're romantically involved in your business and you don't want to accept that it's gone down. And then just there comes a day when you say, this has to stop, you know. And when I realised that, I had a meltdown for about 10 minutes. And then I just said, you know, you can't just give up here. You got to keep going. And that's what we did, and we tried to rebuild. I mean, almost a year, I was out of work. Then I started to work for Louis Murray in the Pink and Dawson Street. And that went on for about a year, and then this opportunity came up, and here we go. And you know, I'm trying to rebuild my life. Yeah.
And how do you go about that on a practical level when you've got to go, you know, you have to get finance from somewhere to start up a new business while you're carrying a debt burden? How did that happen?
Well, I was very lucky because the premises I'm in at the moment, it was struggling at the time, and some friends of mine were involved, and they actually brought me into the business to help. And the deal basically was, without going into all the detail, was if I took over a certain amount of debt and creditors there, I could eventually own a portion of the business. And then as time went on, I could have the opportunity to take it all. And that's what I'm going through at the moment. Like, we took over a certain amount of debt. We've sorted that out. It's going well. The business is going well. I mean, you'll never make a fortune out of a small restaurant like that, but it pays the mortgage and it keeps me going, you know.
And can you see your way through to clearing the debt and getting back in the black?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I don't think I'll ever actually walk in and, you know, give them a cheque for the full amount. But I think we'll deal with it over a period of time. I mean, I've already had some of them that have, you know, dealt with it in certain ways, and, you know, that I can manage. Unfortunately, it's a pretty substantial amount. But I'll get through it, and I think they'll allow me to work through it, you know. And I think as
so it's a number of banks you're talking about?
Yeah, it's a number of banks and leasing companies. But I think, you know, I'll get through it. Yeah, I'm pretty confident I'll get through it. I won't give up anyway, you know, and I'll keep going. But I think it's an awful lot easier now than it was 5 years ago, you know, and in 5 years' time, it'll be a lot easier again, you know. So, yeah, we just keep going onwards and upwards, yeah.
You never mentioned whether you considered bankruptcy. Was that ever an option?
Well, friends of mine, I think this is kind of ironic, but I think you have to have money to go bankrupt, you know. Like, if you want to go bankrupt and leave here and go to the UK, it's quite an expensive thing to do. Like, you've got to get an address over there, you've got to live, you've got, you know. So that was never a consideration. And to go bankrupt here, at the time, it would have been 12 years, and I was never going to do that. And I always felt that I could get through this. I mean, you know, I didn't really have a plan how I was going to get through it, but I felt I could. And I just never really want to give up. Like, I just felt that bankruptcy was given up. I know people would disagree with that because you can start again. But I just felt that was given up. And I'm glad now I didn't. I mean, we're 5 years down the road, and I think I'm going to get through this without having to go bankrupt.
In that year when you were out of work, I presume there were lows.
Oh, there were lots of lows. Again, though, I have a good bunch of friends around me, and to be fair to them, I mean, for that year, they carried me. I don't think I paid for a lunch or a drink in that year, you know, which is great. But there were lows because, first of all, you don't like being carried. But at the same time, it was a reality. It was what it was. So a lot of people that I owed money to, like, you know, even one of my kids was in school, and she was in a fee-paying school, but they put it on hold and they were very good. So, you know, most of the people I dealt with were good about it and helped me through the year. And then when I got into work the following year, I was able to pay back some of those debts, you know. So, yeah, again, as I say, I don't like looking back at it too.
When times were good, you would have known a lot of people. You were in a very people-friendly business and you had to be the front-of-house man, whether it be in the restaurant or in Reynard's, the nightclub, which was quite something on the Celtic Tiger scene. What about all those people that you would have met and the contacts you would have made? Were any of them any help, or did they scatter to the four winds when trouble hit?
Yes and no. I mean, there's a certain amount of people that, you know, call them shallow, whatever. But I mean, they disappear. I mean, you know, if you're useful to them, they want to know you. If you're not, they're not. So if they want to get into your nightclub, they're all around you, hugging you, kissing you, shaking your hand. You get used to that over the years. But I would say it's a much bigger majority who have supported me since. I mean, a lot of these people that I've seen in the club are now regular customers in the restaurant. So, you know, there's a lot of support there. And I'm lucky that I know a lot of people. And actually, a couple of funny stories, actually. Because I do know so many people, I've had phone calls from banks and they've said, look, Robbie, you need to come in and see us. We've got an issue here. And when I come in, I know the guy because he used to come to Reynard's, you know. And then the whole meeting takes on a different, you know, and it tends to be a lot better for me at that stage, you know.
You must have some great stories from the nightclub days, though, because
I'm not telling you.
The destination was Reynard's.
The book is coming. You can buy that.
The famous faces, though, there must have been some A-listers in there at some point.
Oh, my party piece, my great story I tell, and it's a bit sad about the city, but I mean it's under pressure at the moment. But here's a story: we had the MTV Awards, I think. We're on the Point Depot at the time, and we had the after show party. And I remember the place was wall to wall with celebrities. Like, you know, you had the Coors, you had Tom Jones was there, U2 were there, Mick Hucknall was there, and so on and so on. I can go on. Everybody who was on the show was there. And I was famous, as you probably know, for being caught serving drink after hours. I mean, that's a historical fact at this stage. But at 4 o'clock, we got raided by the police, and the doorman came up and he says, the police are at the door. Now, we were supposed to be closed at 2:30. So I went down to the door and I said, please, please don't do this today. I mean, the place. And I told the guy who was there, he said, I don't care. He said, you should be closed. I said, well, look, let me do this myself. And he said, no. So he comes upstairs, puts on all the lights and stood there with the yellow jacket and made them all walk out. And it was a funny scene to see all these famous people walking with their head down going by the guards. And I remember seeing in the corner, there was a vanguard. Or I don't think they're called band guards anymore. They were a female guard.
They're all guards.
They're all guards. Okay, it was a guard in the corner taking notes from Jim Corr. And I remember saying, oh no, I mean, the Jim is not going to be happy with this. And I went over to intervene, but in actual fact, she was getting his autograph. And I thought it was very, really funny at the moment. But anyway, there you go.
Will you be busy with Garth Brooks should that happen?
Well, funny enough, I mean, we've had quite a few bookings because all the hotels around us are full. So now, unfortunately, we've had some cancellations already. And I think that from the news this morning, I think it's not going to go ahead. So I think there's going to be a lot of very disappointed people, including me. I think that's going to hurt. It's going to hurt the city, obviously. Yeah. So, but there's always something else to look forward to. The horse show is coming. We're looking forward to that.
Robbie Fox, thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thank you.